my grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about hey now, hey now, hey now, Aiko, ande, Giacomo Fino, Anane, Giacomo Finane.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Ooh, what a week, what a world.
What a week, what a world. This is Bowen Yang.
This is Matt Rogers, and this is the Las Culturistas podcast. We are here. We got our hats on. Mm. We have our guest in studio ready to scour culture, ready to go for culture. And it's been quite a couple weeks personally and publicly.
It's been a huge personal and public couple of weeks.
Absolutely. There's a lot to discuss, and we have a great guest, an old friend. From Bowen and I's NYU days.
One of my first friends in New York.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. One of my first friends in New York. And we can go into this later with our history, mama.
That's true.
But listen, she writes for SB Nation. She writes for Jalopnik. She writes for Funny or Die, Above Average. I could go
on. One half of the sketch comedy powerhouse duo, and I say that with my hands giving inflections, with Raleigh Williams, called Stevedore.
Stevedore.
You must check them out. Everyone, come on.
Come on.
Give it up. It's Nicole Conlon.
Nicole. Hey.
It's hello.
Hi.
Okay, this is very exciting. Like we said, old friends.
Old friends, a lot of history.
And I actually remember the first time I met Nicole, but I don't know if you remember this.
I think I do, and I'm already embarrassed.
No,
what you're about
no, it's
to say.
So good. It's so good. It's so good. So I became part of Hammercats, yes, which was the sketch comedy group at NYU, and you guys were in Danger Box,
yes,
which was the improv group at NYU. Mm-hmm. And I was like kind of newly out of the closet, like, and shyly going over to like our friend's house where we had like the opening party, and like, oh, I don't know, what will they think? And I remember Colin Cortopassi, our friend, like saw me and kind of whispered to Nicole like a question that I knew was, is he gay? Because like, oh, always gay men have to like check in with their straight girlfriends, like, is he gay?
Yes.
Like,
side note, I'm always the wrong straight girlfriend to check in with on that.
I mean, also my gaydar is totally shot.
But also Nicole at the time, like, and still does, but like attracted an impressive coterie of gay men at NYU.
A coterie. And anyway, I just remember what she said was, she looked at me, she looked back at Colin and goes, this is truly Nicole's essence. She goes, toss up.
Yep.
Toss up.
That's great.
Like, and that's the
with an earshot, like you could hear her.
Oh, fully.
My dad and I are in the same way where I have the hardest time understanding what volume I'm speaking at. At any given time. Whenever Raleigh and I are out in public somewhere writing and I start getting excited about something, I'll talk louder and he always has to be like, you were embarrassing me.
That's so funny that because Raleigh's girlfriend, Sudie Green, does the same thing to me. I'm constantly screaming when I'm excited or worked up about anything. He's like, okay. Just want to let you know, she's like, you're screaming. But you're screaming at this moment.
And the chain goes on, continues at me, because I feel like you check my volume sometimes. My volume.
When do I do that? In like a restaurant or public space?
Public space is when I get too loud and like you will like shoot me a look and be like, Bowen, behave.
Yeah. I just love being the power. I love telling Bowen to shut up.
Ugh,
quiet down.
Nicole and I go way back. Nicole and I first saw each other in high school.
It goes back all the way to Denver.
Yeah.
We
dipped a toe in Denver.
Because
we met, our high school improv groups were performing at the same theater, mm-hmm, and we literally met for one night and then didn't talk again.
Yep. You met eyes.
Yeah.
You met eyes. And you knew.
Yeah.
And we knew. Well, then, and then it took a minute where we became Facebook friends before we had even met again in person at NYU.
Yeah. And I think it took us both a while to figure out, like, oh, that's the other person
that I met. Yeah.
Well, did you guys do that thing? Where you got accepted to NYU and then proceeded to friend request randomly, like,
yes,
hundreds of people.
I didn't because
oh, didn't?
I was, well, but I came to NYU, it was sort of like a fluke. Like, mm-hmm, it was not, I applied there because my high school guidance counselor made me go there, but like,
yeah,
all of my other choices were other schools, and just through like a series of random events, NYU ended up being the only option. And I was like, I had been to New York once and I hated it. And I was like, I don't want to go there. I don't want to study theater. I don't like any of these people and I'm too good for all of this.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
They friend requested me and tried to be like very welcoming and like friendly. And I'm a stubborn asshole and was just like, I don't need to be friends with any of you.
Nicole dragged kicking and screaming to the then number one dream school in the country.
In the top studio.
They wouldn't let that go.
What do you mean?
They wouldn't let that. They were always talking about how, you know, NYU was the number one dream school, right?
Here's the thing. I need to be honest, though, because people are like, but you got in, Nicole. That's so impressive. And it's like, I think I got in because my parents could afford it.
To be honest
with you, that was a big part of the reason.
Your admission?
Yeah, I think so.
I actually think that they accepted a lot of people. I think it was kind of easy to get in, depending on what program you were.
I thought it was kind of easy to get in. I think it's a 30% acceptance rate.
Yeah, I don't think it's crazy competitive. Also, there's a lot of space to put these people, and they want your fucking money. Yeah. They're a fucking...
horrible
scam.
Yep.
I mean, I was thinking, and I'm not proud that I went to NYU, but I was thinking back to like some of my education, and I'm like, holy shit.
Oh God.
Well, in the same way that I'm a very stubborn asshole and like didn't want to be friends with anybody in the theater program, I transferred into Gallatin because I'm the kind of person who's like, I want to be able to do whatever I want.
So you were originally in drama.
I was in ETW.
Studying experimental theater.
Yeah. And then I transferred into Gallatin because I didn't want to have to learn anything. And then I went there and I was like, I'm going to design my own course of study. And then in retrospect, it's like, I learned nothing. Ugh. I did not learn anything in college. It's like a little bit embarrassing how little I did and how little
I learned. It kind of makes me feel like, because I truly do believe that if I were essentially, because at 18 years old, when you graduate high school, you pretty much are forced to go to college. I mean, unless you can't go, if you're from like the suburbs, like, or the nicer suburbs or whatever, like, or if you're from any middle class, like, upbringing, like, that's what you do. Yeah. You know, you go to college despite
it's high school
knowing
part two.
Or it's you, high school part two, or you don't, and you don't necessarily know what the fuck you want to do. I mean, I think probably all three of us thought we were going to do one thing when we went to school and ended up doing something totally different.
Yes. I mean, my education in NYU was like all in the gradient towards like doing well in my MCATs. And now, like, with some distance away from school from undergrad, like, I remember nothing.
I bet some people would be surprised to know that about you, though.
I was a pre-med at NYU, but I was on the improv group. So, like, my social circle was like mostly like people and Tish kids. Actually, like, cool people I wanted to hang out with. I mean, like, look, there were some great people in the pre-med program, but it was just very competitive.
It's very specific. When you do this, especially when you do comedy and when you hang out with the group of people we did, it's your brain works a very specific way, and it does become very different or difficult to hang out with people who, like, are just normal people. And that's not to say is better or worse.
No. But it is a culture.
It's a specific culture, and it's hard to let it go. It's if you're always doing bits... you know, a regular conversation just becomes very stressful because you're trying to figure out like the game of the conversation.
Yeah,
like
you're
I'm
like,
just telling
you're like,
you about my
when,
drive to work.
When do we laugh? Yeah. When, like, I remember my first year I was in liberal studies. Well, because to like reveal something about my experience at NYU, I was on essentially what was disguised as an academic scholarship, but it really was an athletic scholarship. I was supposed to run track at NYU.
I didn't know that.
And they gave me like, not a great amount, but an okay amount of financial aid for me to say, okay, it's not completely irresponsible for me to go to NYU. But because it was a D3 school, they couldn't call it an athletic scholarship.
Right.
So I had applied early decision to Columbia, but just wasn't a good enough student to get in there, but had the athletic seal of approval. Mm. And the same thing happened at NYU, and because it was easier to get in, they gave me like what was sort of an athletic scholarship, but they called an academic scholarship, which I was then able to quit the track team and still keep because they couldn't take my academic scholarship away.
Oh my God, that's so
funny. I was on the track team for 5 days. And then I was like, no.
I remember you hated it. You've told this story before.
It was so bad. I mean, it was just like, that's why I feel like you don't go to school when you're 18. Or like, I don't necessarily recommend it because I truly feel if I were forced to go to college now, and this is my original point, that I would want to learn so much more.
Oh, yeah.
I would seek out knowledge.
I have considered going to grad school not because I want to like do anything with it, but because I want the opportunity to study something that isn't.
Exactly.
Like,
put in your all.
Anything related to what I'm trying to do career-wise.
Matt's hat just fell off.
Yeah, get the culture hat, Bo, and we'll talk.
I have a question for you, Nicole, because I think you told me this about you with NYU, with like your reluctance to matriculate, I guess. But like, what was your top choice?
So I had wanted to study ancient history, and it's very difficult to do that in America because we're not close to any of the artifacts. So I think my top two choices were, they were both in England. Actually, I think one was maybe University of Edinburgh and the other was University of Manchester.
That had been
my plan. And then my mom, and like real quick, this is going to sound like I'm blaming my mom for all my problems. Like things worked out well. I have a very good life.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
I'm maybe happier doing this, but like, my mom, when it came time to like really like commit to a school, was like, I don't want you going overseas. Like,
yeah.
And so, and then at that point, like the schools I had gotten into in the US, like the dates had already passed, yeah, or like I didn't really, I was sort of applying there because I had to. And so it came down to like NYU or like I could go to like CU Denver.
Right, right.
I think what your mom was really thinking was it's going to be very hard for you in England to decide you want to do comedy later.
Yes.
So
yes,
she was exactly, like, I just want you to have a solid back, a solid fallback of
her
comedy.
Her thing is, she's very like, she's actually gotten much better about it. But like when I left, her thing was like, if you're in New York and you get like really sick or something, I can be there in 4 hours.
Yeah,
but
no,
if you're
that's
in England, it'll take me 2 days to get
and
there.
And again, maybe a reason why we're not ready and we shouldn't be sending 18-year-olds yeah to school because God, we don't want them to fucking get sick overseas. Yeah. Okay, well then why are we putting them in like this kind of stressful situation?
Yep. Elizabeth Conlin, your mother, just a wise woman, because I remember right out of college when I was like getting ready for my MCATs or when I was taking them or a second time around, mm-hmm, I remember her asking you and then you asked me sort of as like by proxy, you were,
it's
like,
which is so funny because now you and my mom have each other's phone numbers and you could just text each
exactly,
other.
Exactly. Hi, I'm going to text Elizabeth later. And she had asked you to ask me what my plan was and like what I wanted to specialize in. And I just, when you asked me that, I like froze up, and that was like one of the moments that led up to me being like, oh, I can't do
and
this.
And my mom, yeah, to her credit, has, both my parents are physicians, and both of them have always from day one been like, don't, the same way that comedians say it, like, don't, mm-hmm, do this unless you have, mm-hmm, to do,
yeah,
this. Like,
yep,
don't do this unless you can't do anything else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I totally agree with that. I mean, it's crazy, but I do think like, as I've gotten older, I have started to sort of pick up on what my other interests are.
Yes.
Like, I really feel like if this whole thing doesn't work out, I would like to go to school for like psychology or something.
Oh.
I would love to like get a master's degree in that and maybe like sort of get into therapy.
Yeah.
Like, or just something like that. Also, I am really enjoying reading a lot about like gender, and like I'm really liking like all these conversations that we've been having over the past couple weeks and like our community on Facebook and what's now become essentially the entertainment community at large.
Yeah.
With this now what's become like this Amy Schumer controversy. Like, it's just so interesting for me to hear all their perspectives and like, you know, obviously I feel a certain way, but it's just like really kind of, it's this interest in like,
mm-hmm,
in like gender and like all that stuff that I never thought I had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that like,
and just politics in general.
Sparked something.
But it's like, but I would never have known I was interested in any of this.
But
and
I
don't know if I could have gotten interested in it.
No.
I think I needed the life experience leading up to this point.
Sure.
Right. And so maybe, yeah, it's like
everybody go to
baptism
grad school
by fire.
Yeah. Everyone go to grad school is what the moral of this,
yes,
is. Nicole, we have to ask you, like we ask all of our guests, yes, what is culture that shaped you?
Yeah.
When did you think culture was for you? Sorry, we just say this every...
when did you decide that culture was for you?
Yes.
So I listened to your podcast and I knew you were going to answer this question. And in the days leading up to the podcast, I've been like, I should think about my answer so I have a good, uh-huh, one. And then I didn't until now. But I was sort of thinking about it on the train over, and I think like many things, I think I'm sort of at a weird place in my life right now where I don't know if it's just because I'm very busy or very stressed, mm-hmm, or if there's like something wrong with me, but there are things that I know that I was into,
yes,
when I was younger, but now I can't remember any specific thing about those things.
See, I kind
and
of...
And it's terrifying.
Yes, I relate to that, but
like,
why do you
I
think
just,
that is?
I don't know. I just listened to Sudi's episode, and she was talking all about Lord of the Rings, and I was, like, into Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm, and I was, like, a real weird... I for sure have some level of Asperger's, and like at that time it was like, well, I'm in Lord of the Rings now. I'm going to like learn how to speak yeah, Elvish, and I'm going to like get all
this
the
is
action
it
figures. And
yeah,
I read the Silmarillion, which nobody's read.
You read the Silmarillion.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, but now like I can barely remember Lord of the Rings at all. And I've read those books all the way through multiple times. I've seen those movies in the extended editions multiple times.
I used to spend hours on the Star Wars website and probably couldn't tell you even one name of anyone on the
Isn't
Jedi
that
Council.
So, and I, and it, this makes me feel better
yeah,
that it's
no,
also
yeah,
happening because it really does feel like, oh, I'm losing my mind.
It's that inside out moment of when what's his name fades away.
Oh God.
You know, yeah, what's yeah, Bing Bong? Which,
but,
whatever.
But there's something else. It's like some people can
Inside Out.
Some people can so readily answer that question, like, what did you grow up loving?
And it's because it wasn't a well thought out movie.
I just didn't love it.
Pixar gave it like 70%. I read an article in like maybe like Wired or something or Fast Company when that movie was in production, and they were building it up to be like,
yeah, the one.
This is the one that Pixar's been working up to this whole time. And it was like 2 years before it came out, and how they like originally had a whole script, and then they realized that they had done it all wrong and they had a new direction for the movie, and like that was the point. Like, you should be able to start over again. And then I saw the movie and I was like, oh, there's a lot of fuss over not a particularly good movie.
They just such a big fucking deal about every single goddamn Pixar movie. And I'm like, no, I know it's not better than Monsters, Inc. You did it. You done it.
Guys,
you done it already.
We're coining you done
it. Rule number 250.
You done it. Thank you.
When you make Monsters, Inc., you done it.
But so the stuff that I do remember about like being very culturally defining for me was like, this is a thing I was talking to my boyfriend about recently. I think if I could sort of map my ultimate long-term career trajectory, it would be like, I would do comedy for a long time, and then I would maybe like step back from the spotlight a little bit and like write books or like write for television, and then I would want to go like the Michael Palin route and just do like weird travel shows where I do like quips. That's what I want.
I love that.
But I think like the first thing that I remember like being like, this changes everything, was there was a 4-part documentary series back when TLC and the Discovery Channel were like educational, more or less. And it was John Cleese did a 4-part series about the human face. Oh, and I have it on DVD, and it's fascinating. I still think it's incredible. Wow. And it's very funny, but it's John Cleese and Elizabeth Hurley are in it. And then there's like interviews Pierce Brosnan and like other, but it's like all about like the way that the face is shaped by biology and how like the brain interprets it, and then how like
educational culture.
Yes. And I think that is something that still kind of holds true for me. And then there's also like weird, like cartoons I like a lot.
Yeah, SpongeBob.
SpongeBob's a huge, huge, huge thing for me. I think the best 12 minutes of television ever written are Band Geeks, the SpongeBob, so called Band Geeks.
So do you get excited for the, because we just talked about Inside Out, do you get excited for the animated movies that when they come
sometimes
out?
Sometimes it's, the thing is like, all of them are supposed to be like, oh, sweet, and they have so much heart. Yeah. But like the cartoons that I like are like SpongeBob's just fucking stupid.
It's
like,
that's so dumb.
Like
so
that's what I like. This is a thing. Andy Samberg was on Pete Holmes' podcast, and he had this quote that was like, oh, somebody gets it, where he was like, I think important, I'm doing air quotes, important comedy is having a moment right now. And that's great. And I think it should. And like, we need it. And it's doing really good, important things. But I got into comedy because I like just doing stupid dumb, shit. Silly,
same.
Stupid
it's
stuff.
A little too earnest and sincere now, you think?
Yeah. I kind of agree. I'm not going to, I'm like, Amy Schumer's show, like do the 12 Angry Men episode is like, yeah, that's an important piece of like art and comedy, and we should absolutely celebrate it. I think Pop Star was the best movie of the
year. I totally agree with you.
We love
Pop
Star.
We literally had so much fun watching it. And also, you know, we just saw it and we
fucking
loved Bad Moms.
You would love Bad Moms, Nicole.
I think
it was so stupid.
It was so dumb.
But
it was
also, this is my particular taste, is it like, sort of kind of is about a thing that you do think about. There was a message, but you get at any quote-unquote point by being so fucking stupid. Everything Catherine Hahn says in the movie is so
she's
stupid.
A genius.
Full genius. Pop Star is so fucking funny. It's just so funny. And it recalled a time of when I was seeing movies a lot in high school, which is we're all the same age. And so like I feel like this was reminding me of like Reno 911 and like Scary Movie 3, I should
Scary
be specific.
Movie 3, the best one.
And like Anchorman, which was like truly dumb.
Yeah.
But that was what made me want to do it. And also, honestly, Lonely Island.
Lonely Island.
They were huge for me.
Huge influence on Matt. But Nicole, okay, this is interesting because I feel like there are intersections of dumb and important. And it's interesting that you brought up Michael Palin and John Cleese because I feel like maybe, unless you got to this later in life, I feel like Monty Python probably had an effect on you.
Totally. There's this book that I got that I can't remember the title of now.
I know what book you're talking about.
It's like analyzing Monty Python. And it's like a hard book.
Yeah,
like it looks, it's got like a fun like flying circus cover. So you're like, what? This is gonna be a great beach read. And then it's like harder than most of the like,
of course,
like interdisciplinary texts I read in college. I feel like, Jesus Christ,
Monty Python is like truly the smartest people ever doing the dumbest
shit.
The
absolutely,
and that's how you know it should be
so
allowed.
Like, yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and it, and this book, because I always thought about it like, oh, this dead parrot sketch is so funny. It's a guy who won't admit the parrot's dead, and then you read this book, and it's like, well, actually, Monty Python was one of the most subversive acts on television at the time, and it completely and I was like, oh, I didn't understand it. All of this is why I was funny, but okay. Like,
but also, yeah. I do think it takes a smart person to get that kind of dumb.
Sure.
I really do. Like, I think that, like, for example, you know, were you guys fans of Wondershowzen?
Yeah.
I never saw
Oh my God. Just, you got to check it out. Or maybe it was only funny to me, like, being, like, really tired at night in high school, but, like, it was so fucking funny, and it was so fucking stupid, but like, and it was like a kid's show that was like inappropriate. Like, that was what was so crazy about it. But I just remember some of the jokes that I now look back on, and they still hold up for me. Like a random non sequitur being like, they do a sketch, whatever, and then a transition would be like a little girl like having an anguished like moment, and the voiceover was, "You're never too young for a Vietnam flashback." And I was, and so she was funny. Just like, and there was just like bombs going off in the back, and it was over in 4 seconds.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, that to me is brilliant. I don't know what to say. Like that gets it for me. Like I will. That will stand the test of time.
You know what stands the test of time and will for all time?
What?
Scary Movie 3.
Yes.
When?
No, I know what you're talking about. This is the best.
Okay,
scene. This is the best scene in cinematic history.
The guy walks out with his daughter or whatever.
No,
his
it's
sister.
So funny. Anna Faris and Simon Rex.
Simon Rex.
Literally, we are the only ones who know his name. Former gay porn movie star.
He only
Simon
did solo
Rex.
Scenes. He did solo.
He only
scenes.
Did solo stuff, but he did like show his asshole and jack off. In gay porn.
Yep.
Sure.
And he was in Scary Movie 3 as like the romantic lead.
Sure.
The comic lead with Anna Faris. They have this like sweet scene in a classroom. And he's like, take it easy. And he picks up his like niece from school and they leave. And the scene lingers on the door for just like 2 seconds. And then like dozens of crayons just like hit the door. Cut to Regina Hall, the kindergarten teacher, going,
"Now who the fuck did that?"
And scene over. Scene over. Next scene.
So good.
"Who the fuck did that?"
And you know it was in the script. Like, you know it was in the script because, like, what? Like, it's just like
stupidest
fucking interaction between Anna Faris and Simon Rex. The door closes, seconds go by. All these fucking crayons. Who the fuck did that?
It's so
moving on.
There's,
oh my
there's,
God.
I think the moment within the past like 5 years, I think that I laughed at on a television show harder than anything else was the show Those Who Can't on True TV. There's just one moment. It's at the end of an episode. It has nothing to do with the episode. There's like, because it's a show about teachers. And I'm not just saying this because they're from Colorado. And I'm not just saying that. This. So it's they're teachers at a school and there had been like an assembly or something, and the mascot named Terry is rolling across the screen, and one of the guys is just sitting there, and Terry rolls past and he goes, "Terry, you're so dumb."
I think I've heard you reference this.
"You're so dumb."
Oh my God. That reminds me, I don't know if this is like a good connection, but that reminds me of when you and I, Nicole, were at your house winter break and like 2009 watching SpongeBob SquarePants Mystery with the Twistery, and then
that's such a funny movie.
Such a funny movie.
And is it a movie?
It was like an
Mystery
extended,
at the
it's
Twistery.
Like a, it's like a made for TV movie.
And then
I referenced this. Oh, I forgot about this until it's so funny.
And then wait, can you walk me through this again? Someone goes up to Patrick. A fish goes up to Patrick. Wait, what does he say? He goes, Are you a werewolf? It's about werewolves, right? I'm butchering
it's,
this.
I have to look it up now.
We'll look it up. Oh,
get
God,
it?
It's
and
so
also
funny.
A solid year we quoted
we
it.
We quoted this all
Do you
year
know
long.
What I'm realizing? I'm remembering now that people love and I love is like honestly just like quotable lines. Like movies and like things right
There's
now.
Some people
they
like to make fun
have...
of the guy who makes who just quotes movies at the party, which I get it, but there's so much of me that is that
Oh my
guy.
God, yeah. Do you know what I just remembered? Fucking Middle Ditch. In I don't like water. I've never drink it.
Middle Ditch. Oh my
I
God.
I don't like water. I never drink it.
Oh my God. And Josh Rubin.
Josh Rubin and Middle Ditch.
Oh my God. And those College Humor videos. So
honestly, you know what's crazy to realize?
Yeah.
Is that I've been watching some of the people that I like
Oh, wait.
I've been watching so many people for so fucking long. Like, Middle Ditch, I've been watching his fucking videos for so long.
Uh-huh.
Like, even, like, the Derek guys. Like, it's just crazy. Like, and we've officially, like, there's people that I've met now that I'm like, oh, yeah, I watched your video in middle school.
Middle Ditch did, Nicole got Middle Ditch to do monologues for a Danger Box show.
Which is so
our
crazy.
Our sophomore year.
Oh,
and then
God.
He just kind of did monologues and sat there and was, like, a little, like, oh, yeah, I'm here, whatever. And then Nicole and I did a whole scene about Williamsburg. And at the time, it was like...
It was still cool to make fun of hipsters.
It was still cool to make fun of hipsters and make fun of Williamsburg. And then Middle Ditch laughed a lot. And I was so proud. I was like, Middle Ditch likes us.
The line was... there was like a...
The SpongeBob line?
Yeah. Patrick goes up to a fish and he's like, well, you might not be a butler, but are you a werewolf? Out of nowhere, in no context within the episode. And the guy's like, what? No. And Patrick's like, okay. And he walks away. And then he just turns into a werewolf.
And screams. It's so goddamn funny.
It has nothing to do with the rest of the episode.
See, that
I love that.
We're going to return to that very soon. Like, absurd, stupid comedy.
It must go that way.
It has to.
It has to.
That's what all of our references have been tonight. Like, Monty Python, SpongeBob, fucking Wonder Shows, and, like, all of those things.
I do. I love it. I mean, but I do really appreciate what's going on now. Like, I do like all of it, but I definitely...
There's room for both.
I think there is room for both, especially with so many platforms.
I think that's the issue is now it's so many like, and I work for one, so I've worked for multiple, many clickbait websites where it's like, they want to make a funny video, but they want it to have a point because that's like what's shareable or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's like just like an oppressive force in comedy right now.
I think it's the only thing that's not funny. Clickbait.
It's clickbait.
It's so not fucking transparent. Funny. And like, honestly,
not the show transparent. Like, I'm saying it's all transparent.
Yeah, yeah.
No. I thought you meant the show transparent.
We thought you
transparent
meant the
transparent is clickbait, y'all.
Transparent is not funny clickbait.
imagine if
on
I
my
took
tombstone.
A
Like, honestly, Bowen and I are trying to work on something right now, and it's just so frustrating to have to deal with, like, oh, you have to water it down this way and this way, even though it is best this way. We know that.
This is, you're doing, like, a branded thing?
Well, it's like we're trying to get something done that we really like, and
it's not even branded, but for some reason, there are marketing considerations to be had, and we're like, what?
We were told we were too niche. I'm like,
which was code for too gay.
Interesting way of saying that we're too gay.
Which is fucked up. Honestly.
Which is stupid. I mean, like, honestly, and I understand it, but, like, get a spine. Yeah. Get a backbone. You know it's good. We know it's good. It will find an audience. Yeah. It's just, like, I understand maybe you don't feel like you cater to the audience. And also, like, I understand that they have a job to do, but it's just bullshit. It's just so annoying.
What, you lose 100 subscribers who are homophobic and pieces of shit anyway? Like, who cares?
People just don't.
The other thing about working in the internet for as long as I have is like, those people are never going to be happy. Like, just make stuff like, cool. You keep the 100 subscribers who aren't cool with gay people, and then you lose the subscribers who decide they're comedy experts and think you're not funny.
I mean, small plug. We just had a fucking amazing experience with Comedy Central, who just let us do whatever
and
we
did
wanted.
Did not get in our way.
Didn't get in the way at all. Only contributed positively to the product. It's our video is with Popper Letts called Sex with My Teacher. It's coming out this weekend. We think it's great. Didn't try to change any lyrics.
I didn't realize, like, Comedy Central was on board for that.
No, yeah, that was part of a we popular that was comics to watch last year, so we got to make a video
that's right.
with
I did
them.
Know that. Yeah.
So like, it was really cool, and the whole situation was so wonderful.
It was such
so it's
a good
like
experience.
It's so it made me kind of realize, like, after the fact, because I didn't even realize working on it that this had been the case, but I was like, wow, it does exist. Like, you can have a positive working experience with one of these like large companies.
Yeah.
Like, it can happen. But, like, it seems to be these little internet companies that, like, don't...
Yeah.
Maybe because they have
and
more
riding
on it.
I shouldn't throw any of my companies under the bus except Sports Illustrated, which I will happily throw under the bus. Woo. But like, both Gawker, rest in peace, and Jalopnik still exists, but Gawker doesn't.
And
SB Nation have been very, like... They will let me kind of do whatever I want, but because they're... Like, SB Nation exists for sports fans, and Jalopnik exists for car fans, so there's no reason for me to... do like sketch content on there, but they're like, if you can do whatever you want with cars and sports, but...
turn something into your editor at Jalopnik. I think this is incisive.
Yeah.
I think this is really going to turn some heads.
Nicole, this is a 7-page Powerpuff Girls parody.
Yes, it is. And it's pretty subversive. It's not. It's just not what we do.
Oh,
see
my
ya.
God. Jalopy. So you work at, so at one point in time, prior to this week, you worked for two media conglomerates, for Vox and for Gawker Media. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there like any like crazy, like, is that like a weird experience at all? Or you're just working for, you're just a free agent for all this site?
Yeah, well, I'm full-time. I was full-time at Gawker with Jalopnik, and then mm-hmm. I left when I started at SB Nation. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I was never at them at overlapping times. I think the weirdest thing about it is so like...
You don't have to talk. We don't have to put work on blast.
No. And you're not at all. Because the thing is, it's like an unbelievably good job. The thing about SB Nation is like all of my coworkers, it's the first time I've ever been insecure about the fact that like all of my coworkers could easily walk out of the office and into a UCB class and be the funniest guy in the UCB class.
Oh, don't you hate that?
And be like better than me at comedy.
Oh,
and
I feel like that.
And they just like love sports and writing, and they're like, I have no interest in comedy.
But they're so funny.
That is so eye-opening. Is when you realize, like I have some friends from high school who a couple of them, like, I know could have been superstars.
Yeah.
Like my best friend, Ken from home, he's like handsome, like a movie star, like probably more handsome than like Chris Hemsworth, like so funny. And like,
and just
I
a
feel
nice
like
guy.
If it's so nice and like charismatic and everyone knows it. And then when he walks in the room, and I'm just like, if he had decided to like try to do this, like he might have been absolutely huge.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so funny because like some
people
for a long
time,
just aren't
Raleigh
as fucking
was
into
my guy
themselves.
Like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Cause for a long time he didn't necessarily want to move to New York. And so I was like, man, it sucks that Raleigh Williams is just going to live in Denver
forever. That's
what
I thought.
And then he moved here and I was like, oh, thank God.
Nicole took me to one of Raleigh Williams' stand-up sets in like 2009.
Which he doesn't even do anymore.
And then he killed it. It was like a 20-minute, like more than that. It was like a 30-minute long set. And I was like, this guy's really funny. Why is he not in New York? And then finally he's in New York now and he's not even doing stand-up anymore, but he's still so funny. Yeah. I love Raleigh.
Yeah, I love Raleigh too. So, so much.
But everyone loves Raleigh, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think
he'll be fine. You'll both be fine.
He's going to absolutely nail. But the thing is, it's just so funny to think of those people, like, that just
people.
They just weren't as interested in themselves as we are. like, they were just like, no, actually, I'm going to co-contribute to the world.
I'm very obsessed with myself, yeah.
I mean, if you spend as much time on your phone as we do, like,
man,
just
speaking of
be...
being obsessed with yourself, I just recently started following these YouTube vloggers, these, like, fitness girls.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
I'm obsessed with them.
Would you do a better job of vlogging than they would, you think?
I don't. There's a couple that I think I would do a better job, but there's some that are just like, oh, I get why people like it because you feel like they're your friends.
Exactly. I think you, and I don't like, if there's a wrong way to take this, this is not how I intend to communicate this.
I will
you
be
would,
offended no matter
you would do so. I think you would do so well as like a fitness vlogger.
Here's the thing. I think I could have at one point. I think at this point now, because I'm so like in the comedy world, I don't, everybody else would give me so much shit for
doing
a fitness
vlog. What if you were to own it way ahead of them and be like, hey guys, this is a fucking stupid fitness vlog. Here we go. And it's actually good though.
Yeah. So I could do it sincerely, or I have been trying to write a parody character of that for so long. I think I have a weird thing in my brain where if I'm too close to something, I can't write about it.
Oh,
and that's sort of why
not
I work.
Not until later.
Yeah, it's sort of why I work in sports and why I work in cars briefly, because it was like, I like these things, don't particularly care about them. So it's very easy for me to like disconnect, like just be like, okay, I just have to do this and finish the work. Yeah. I've been trying to write a pilot about the gym. I've been trying to write that gym character. Right now I'm working on another pilot about like a ski resort. I've been working on this screenplay that, back to the history thing, I've been working on a screenplay about Giuseppe Garibaldi for years.
Garibaldi?
You're writing a Garibaldi
screenplay?
Which is crazy to
God.
Me that like Italy hasn't made a Garibaldi biopic since like 1960 or something, and it's not even a particularly good one, which makes me think there's some sort of like life rights issue and I should
probably
just let it sail away.
Sure. Something like that.
But I mean, I can still write it to learn how to write. But like all the stuff that I'm very excited about and passionate about is just like, and maybe it's just because like I'm not good enough yet, so it's like, anything I write is going to be a little bit disappointing to me. But then like I wrote this fucking, I mean, I shouldn't talk about this now that our friend Billy Domino has blown up for his spec script, but I wrote a spec script for the People versus OJ Simpson.
Yes.
That's just a parody spec
God.
Script.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote it in like a day and I was like, well, this is the easiest thing I've ever written and the best thing I've ever, why can't I write something useful?
Wow. But that's so interesting that like in order to right now you're at this point where you have to sort of dissociate from the subject.
I think
matter.
So. And so maybe I should just do a sincere fitness vlog and see where
honestly,
that goes.
Honestly, Yeah, because they say, right, what you know, but also it is hard to do that sometimes when you're like, no, I take this seriously. What do you mean?
And you see the moving parts of it. Yeah.
Yeah. That will be really hard. It's like, and then there's also the flip side of that is when you like are too young to fucking know how to do anything.
And I think I still another reason there a little bit because like back to NYU and me doing whatever the fuck I want. I didn't really learn how to write. I was in a lot of like independent study writing classes where I churned out a certain number of pages, but I was like, I'm gonna write whatever I want and I'm gonna do nonlinear storytelling, and it's just it's garbage. I didn't learn how
to
write.
There's so much
form
breaking.
Yeah,
so much like innovative form breaking in like theater school. It's like, ooh, I'm gonna write the fucking bottle episode.
My senior thesis film is a point of extreme embarrassment for me, and it's so bad that I've never even gone back to edit it because so many people did so much work for me for free, and as soon as I finished it, I was like, oh, this is bad. Mm-hmm. And if I put in the work to finish it, then that's going to take time away from me doing actual productive things.
Yep.
Yes.
And but in and of itself, there you go. And it was an educational aspect.
Yeah. It just
cost
my parents a lot of money
for me to
learn that one lesson.
I mean, I will say like fucking, I remember sitting in class I went to dramatic writing at Tisch at NYU. And I was in like 1 hour drama class where you learn how to write like an episode of 1 hour dramatic television, and everyone had to write a show, which essentially just became a fan fiction like jack off fest. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to write a Grey's Anatomy because I know what this is fucking stupid and I know I can do this just so you guys know, I'm writing this dumb ass show. This will be the stupidest thing you guys read ever. It will be dumb. I don't want anyone to think I took it seriously. I'm not doing it. The kids next to me are like, well, in my episode of Breaking Bad or in my episode of Mad Men, I'm like, who do you think you are that at 20 years old, you can come in here with your Breaking Bad?
And I so was that person that was like, well, I'm going to write a pilot this year and then I'm going to be some sort of whiz kid in Hollywood. Yep. and now I have abandoned that. And now I'm like, I'm 26. I'm so old. No one's going to want me anymore. Yeah. And then I have the very few moments of clarity where I'm like, shut the fuck up, Nicole.
In my thesis class at dramatic writing, a kid wrote like a 1 hour script about like a man in the 1680s who always was going into fugue states and like becoming a different person.
Oh my
but
God.
Like the fugue personalities were helping each other solve a crime. I was like, it was called fugue.
He just loved
because fugue is also a musical type that would have been around during the 1600s.
Honestly, it was crazy.
And he probably just watched that Breaking Bad episode where Walter comes back from his fugue state. And they keep saying the word fugue, 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 fugue.
Literally, fugue state was not a thing before Breaking Bad.
No, it
That's
wasn't.
True. It's 100%
I also, I love using it as like a way, oh yeah, when I went into my fugue state.
I was on a fugue state on Fire Island, yeah. Like
we always refer to our Orlando trip as one long fugue state.
Absolutely.
That's what it was.
Okay, Nicole, the loose theme for this episode is
sports.
Yes.
You just said that you don't care for sports all that much, which is completely well and good. I mean, is there anything? I mean, I don't watch sports really.
I kind of got into sports. I was seeing a guy who liked basketball a lot, and he was a sports writer at the time. Mm-hmm. And then for various reasons, the relationship didn't work out. And then now we both look back and are like, oh, thank God that you moved away and it never would have worked. And now we're friends. So I kind of got interested in it because of that. And then we were in that weird time after college where it's like, I can't get a job unless I like have something to show for myself, but I don't have like a portfolio because I don't have a job. And it's just this endless loop of like, you can't ever get started. So I started blogging for free for some basketball blog. And then I met somebody in a sketch class who introduced me to somebody at Sports Illustrated. And then I think largely because Sports Illustrated need more women. I've also exclusively worked in very male dominated fields. Uh-huh. And so I think many times I have been a diversity hire, which has led me to be just like, this is going to sound terrible for all of the other affirmative action programs in the world, but I have been vastly underqualified for every job I've ever had, except for the one that I currently have, because I have learned from the jobs I was underqualified for.
But that's the point.
And it's been like, because it's sports, it's very, and like, yeah, I don't care what work I'm making. Sure. I'll do whatever you want me to do. I do think having worked in sports for as long as I have, like, I've grown to appreciate it. And I think that it can be a very valuable lens for looking at other parts of culture through. Mm-hmm. And I think the best thing about sports is it's easy to make analogies and like explain complicated concepts to people because sports is sort of a level playing field. Sports term.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. But there are very few sports. Like once I'm done working in sports, I will probably watch occasional basketball games. I'll watch golf, and I don't think I'll ever watch another sporting event. And I'll watch the Olympics because the Olympics are the best.
I used to be obsessed with baseball, like Major League Baseball, like obsessed, like in a real way. It wasn't even like, well, dad liked this, so it was like in a real way obsessed, like the way like you become obsessed with like
a TV show
or anything like that. It was like an obsessive thing. And now I look back and I'm like, that's so funny because I don't even remember how that could happen. Like, I don't even understand how that could happen to me now.
Yeah.
And I think it's part of like, it's like sports was one of those things that got ruined for me as I got older because I realized it was all fake. And like it was one of those things where I was like, no, I'm actually not going to give that a break. Yeah. Like you get older and you watch sports and you realize, well, they're all on steroids or most of them are on steroids. And then like, for example, with baseball, like that entire world, like everything about that, the game in 1998 that made it so exciting, you know, the home run race,
right,
to find out that those were two like actual monsters, Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire, was like not something I was willing to like forgive.
Sure.
Whereas like, you get a little older and you realize like the Oscars are fixed or something and like they pay for those awards to be given out and you're like, eh, I get that it's a business. For me, it's like they're ruining these men's bodies and it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like with the doping things with the Olympics, I'm like, that to me is insane. They can't be wanting to do this. And if they are, there's like mental issues. And like also
Seen, there's a great documentary called Bigger, Faster, Stronger that is about steroids. And it's very interesting. It's not the most well-made documentary because it's like a big gym guy who's like, I want to expose steroid culture in the gym, and he does like the best job he can, but it's not it's never gonna be like Errol Morris, you know. But that's very good. The other thing that I, like sports is useful for me because I have I'm a real weirdo, and I like I said, I for sure have some level of Asperger's, and sports is just a very easy way for me to talk to people. Because it's like, especially because like I don't get that much about sports, I'll be the first person to admit that, but I understand the things to say to make it sound like you know about sports, and then you just let the other person talk, and then it's like, we're friends now.
That's so smart.
I totally get that.
That is like an entry
point. I find it very useful for me, but it's not something I particularly enjoy.
Totally.
I think I'm more like that with music.
I'm in a full vacuum with sports. Like, I honestly, like, I have such, like...
You know nothing?
I mean, pretty much nothing. I mean, I know, like, the real like pervasive things that'll like cut through. Like,
it's also, I will say, growing up in Colorado around Broncos culture is such a sports turnoff.
Yeah. It was a huge sports turnoff for me. I was like, why do you guys worship this guy, John Elway? I mean, I know like I'm I don't know how you feel about John Elway, Nicole, but I moved to Colorado in 1998, and I was like, these people all worship this person.
Yeah,
why? Like, I didn't like coming from Canada where it's like it didn't really matter as much.
It's very weird. And so I also have like a lot of like ethical issues with the NFL now. Like there's a 97% chance that an NFL player will get brain damage. Like, that's not a thing that we can, like, kids shouldn't be playing football. Nope. Like,
I'm happy that that's coming out. And honestly, I say that my father for 30 years was a varsity football coach. And I think it's so a part of like, that it's so a part of the culture that like it's really still really taboo where you kind of want to tap people on the shoulder and be like, but actually look at what's happening.
Yeah,
like actually,
if
watch
an 8-year-old boy
going
has
on.
Multiple concussions, he's fucked up for life. My dad was is like one of the most naturally gifted athletes I've ever met, and he was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys out of college. And he ended up not doing, because this was in the 70s when it was like, he would have been a wide receiver. He was like a skinny white guy wide receiver, and professional athletes didn't make the money back then that they do now. Yeah. And he knew he probably only had like a couple years in him. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, well, I'm going to have to go get a real job. And then I've been like out of school for 2 years, and like didn't make sense. So he turned it down for a variety of reasons. Smart. But now I think like if he had a son, I don't know that he would have let his son play football.
No.
And he even like, because he's a physician, like he treated kids with sports injuries all the time.
Oh, he's an orthopedic physician.
And so he sees all the injuries. And I think even he has come around to being like, football in its current state is bad. We got to do something about it. And even he still watches football as a fan, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like so ingrained.
And also, like, not even about just their health, but the way that they act. They hit their wives. It's not isolated. Like, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to pretend that, like, other athletes are, like, way better. Saints. But, like, the NFL, there's so many problems in the NFL. Yeah.
And I also do think there's a racial element to it.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, why don't we care that these men are kind of killing each other out there? Is it because they're black? Because, like, mostly white men own these teams? Like, mostly white men making the decisions? Like, that feels kind of strange to me.
Yeah.
If you really think about it, like,
the concept of individuals owning sports teams is always, like, never made sense.
It's bizarre. I mean, it's like, oh, we'll trade this one to that one.
Sports is the kind of thing where if you think too hard about it, you're like, sports are bad.
Yeah.
All sports are bad.
It's bad because there's money.
Yeah.
That's why it's bad. It's bad because it's all about money. It's not about winning. It's really not, at the end of the day. Like, it's about money.
Yeah.
And that is why no one is wanting to say anything about these kind of sports injuries and what they do, and also why for so long we didn't say anything about the steroid use, because everyone fucking knew.
Yeah,
everyone knew. How, like, if you, I'll tell you who didn't know, the fans, because I think everyone just, like, ignorance is bliss, and, like, you see these, like, hulks of men. You see Mark McGwire and he's this marvel, and you think, wow, he's our Babe Ruth, and you just keep living your goddamn life. But those team owners all knew. Come on. I remember I went to a doubleheader, the Mets versus the Cardinals in 98. This is like three quarters of the way through the season. We saw Mark McGwire in batting practice hit 17 home runs in batting practice.
Oh my God.
It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my entire life. I'll never forget it. And I remember I stood, like, I was on the floor level, on the ground level, but on the third base side, like a little, like 10 rows back. I had great seats for this doubleheader with my dad, and just watching him do this and seeing how big he was, even from afar, how much bigger he was than everyone else. I was like, whoa. And now to not even have that kind of feeling in your head, like there's something weird going on here. Like, there were grown men and grown adults there, like, that were around him that knew, and they ripped everybody off.
Yeah.
It was fake. It was cheating. It was theater.
Culture room number three.
No
sports are bad. Oh, yeah. Sports are bad.
Because, like, everything's fake, right? I mean,
everything's fake.
You grow up and you realize the politics are fake, the fucking entertainment industry is fake, sports are fake. But it's like, there's something about this, and pretending how noble it is. That's what it is.
Mm.
And I think that, to circle back around, I think that's why maybe I am so drawn to, like, just really stupid, dumb comedy. Because it's like, it's not.
Because life is
not trying to be important. Like, it's
life is a farce.
Yeah. There's no artifice in dumb comedy.
Yeah. It's not like trying to, like, present itself as anything other than, like, this is dumb, right?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly.
Yeah, like, you guys know the world's fucking dumb, right? It's all fake. Yeah. It's all a thing. It's like what RuPaul says.
What does RuPaul say?
It's the Matrix.
The Matrix, honey.
Like, this is, I think, ever since I heard this spoken out loud by RuPaul, it now makes so much sense to me. It's like The Wizard of Oz. It's like, once you realize there's a man behind the curtain, you get disappointed and your instinct is to get fucking angry. Mm-hmm. But it's like, don't get angry. Just, like, understand the truth, which is that everything is fake.
And then play in the fakeness.
Yeah. And why are we get angry? Because we realize we got bought.
Mm.
That's why we're so mad. It's like, we got bought by the Maguire-Sosa thing.
Yeah.
And, like, come on. That was so stupid. And I just remember, like, I think even the next 3 years after that, like, hearing, even for a second, like, the first time I think I heard, like, Mark McGwire cheating steroids, I think I knew even then, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I got to back away from this.
Mm-hmm.
This is so stupid. It was over for me after the Subway series. I was like, no way.
You think you can pinpoint your, like, distaste with and disenchantment with sports to McGrath-Sosa?
I think I can pinpoint... Well, with baseball, I think I can pinpoint it to when the rest of the fucking country was like, fuck this. Mm. Everybody in the country was tuned in for the Subway series.
Mm.
It wasn't just a New York thing, to my understanding. It was, like, nationwide. It was, like, such a big deal. Everyone thought about the home run race. That was national news. It was on the cover of every newspaper. It was such a big deal. Now who fucking cares? It's like, what? We're going to be surprised? Like, A-Rod's fucking who? He's how doped up? Like, he's getting retiring? Okay, cool. I would have thought he was gone 5 years ago. Like, maybe it's just that my priorities and, like, the way I entertain myself have changed, but like I feel like nobody really takes it that seriously anymore.
Sure. I mean, I have no context for this, so this is really,
I mean,
it's really difficult to enforce.
People talking also more about the fucking halftime shows than they are the Super Bowls.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Yep, like they really are.
Yeah.
Like who cares anymore? Like I don't know. I guess people do, but
wow.
And then this has nothing to do with anything, but I watched it last night. There's this documentary called, I think it's called All This Mayhem. Uh-huh. I think, but it's about, so Tony Hawk was the first skateboarder to land the 900.
Right.
And then there's some people who say that like this other guy did it in practice, but like the camera didn't quite catch it. But like, he's the first guy who like, here, I did it. I did it in a contest. Here's irrefutable proof that I did it.
Uh-huh.
But this is a documentary about these two like Australian guys who they explicitly say like, yeah, from the moment I started skateboarding, I just knew I had to go to America because I had to beat Hawk. And it's, and their whole thing is like they just want to beat Tony Hawk. And the documentary like sets it up as like these guys were better skateboarders than Tony Hawk. And Tony Hawk was a big dick to them. And there's a conspiracy to prevent them from spinning this trick in 99 X Games, I think. Like they kept him out and these guys were better skateboarders. And then like the rest of the documentary is just like their lives like falling apart and them doing every drug on
earth. You spoke out.
Yeah. And then I read an interview with Tony Hawk afterwards and he was like, they literally made everything in that documentary. And I watched that, man, I'm obsessed with these kind of documentaries where it's like shitty dudes who are capable of doing one really good thing and then they just can't, their lives fall apart. There's a documentary about the guy who wrote the script for Reservoir Dogs. Or excuse me, not Reservoir Dogs. That's Tarantino. Boondock Saints.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he was just like a shitty boss and guy who was working as a bartender.
Yes, yes, yes.
In LA. And he wrote this script and somehow it got to the Weinstein Company and they were like, yeah, we'll buy it. And so then he got famous and then he just like brought all of his weird Boston friends into it. And the reason there's so much footage is because he was so into himself that he made one of his friends just film everything. Ugh. And there's like 20 speeches that he's giving his friends where he's like, we're gonna fucking shake this town up.
Yes, man. I've heard
we're
of
gonna
this.
Shake this up and we're gonna do something that nobody's ever done before.
Because
he was in a shitty band also.
Oh
so
my
he was
God.
Like, and we're gonna dominate the box office. And we're going to dominate the music charts. And nobody's ever done that before. And I wanted to be like, tons of people have done that.
I love it.
Dolly Parton, Elvis, Barbara Streisand, like Frank Sinatra. Like
Madonna.
Tons of people. Madonna.
Madonna.
Like
Madonna.
So many people. But he was like, this band is going. And then you never actually hear their band play. They got a record. So this guy sold the screenplay for Boondock Saints. And then somehow his band got signed to a record deal because of the script for Boondock Saints. And the record label had never heard this band play. They were just like, well, God. You did Boondock Saints. We'll let Oof. You. And then like the record deal falls apart and they like can't stop drinking. And it's like,
wow,
this insane.
Boondock Saints, literally every older kid on my track team. And I like ran cross country in high school. And like the guys with like long hair who were like did track. They all quoted Boondock Saints in their AOL.
Boondock Saints
is
the
profile.
Movie that like the seniors in high school like.
Yep, God, exactly. Horrible. They were like, you don't get it, but like Boondock Saints.
And now if I think about it, I'm like, was there a plot to that movie?
Yeah.
Like,
have you ever seen the Tonya Harding documentary?
No, it's been on my list for forever. But
you
I
must.
To, I will watch it.
It is because it's truly a crazy person on display. Yeah. I mean, and she's just got so much of her own belief in herself in her eyes. And she's sitting there telling you like, listen, it's a fucking conspiracy. And you're like, you truly are a crazy person on a global stage. Like, and honestly, two things I think are fascinating, which I never really got until recently. Well, three. I mean, the Lewinsky thing like now is fascinating to me because truly you understand how cruel America was to her. And
yes.
That was a story, not of a president cheating on his wife. Because honestly, she probably fucking knew about it. And I don't think she really cared. I think she had to pretend she cared. But I think that's a story about America turning their back on that woman. And I think it's a story of the first real online bullying.
Yeah.
I think we'll look back on that in 100 years and saying that was the state of the world at that time. But also the OJ situation. I had no idea he was as big as he was until the show.
Did you watch the 30 for 30?
No, I haven't, but
it's amazing. The 30 for 30, there's stuff that takes place in that documentary that would not be tolerated in a scripted series because like this could never happen, but it did for him. There's a point in episode one where one of OJ's high school friends is like, I remember we played a hilarious prank on OJ one day. One day we were all alone in the locker room and we pulled a gun on him.
Oh.
And that's the prank.
Oh my God.
That's it. It's crazy. Because I've only ever known him as a murderer. Yeah. The trial happened when I was born. Oh, yes.
That's what our generation
is. And I said, he was like a football player.
I remember, so I started watching The People versus OJ, the Ryan Murphy show. And I was like, hold on. So good.
So good.
And I was like, hold on a second. He was like
a hero.
Already that famous. I texted my dad. I'm like, how famous was O.J. Simpson at the time of his arrest? And he responded, he was the most famous athlete of his generation. And he was more than that. He was a movie star. He was on commercials. He was the first sports star to do that. And then I was like, okay, so this is like as if Michael Jordan or LeBron James or like Serena Williams is where it happened to.
Side note, do you follow Serena Williams on Snapchat?
She's incredible.
She's unbelievable. She's unbelievable.
She's phenomenal.
So I hear, but I have yet to follow. I love Serena. She did that documentary too. The Serena and Venus documentary, that's the truth.
She did did a Vogue 70 fucking whatever questions.
Oh, yeah, I
and
saw
she
that.
Was incredible.
Yeah, she's funny.
She's so funny.
She's also amazing in the Sorry video, the Beyonce Sorry video. She's just fucking getting it.
On Instagram, there's this toast filter. I don't know if you've seen it. There's literally a filter that's just a piece of toast with a hole for your face.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she just does it. Just looks at herself. It's so funny.
That's hilarious.
She's one of the good ones, and she's one of the best athletes of all time. So good for her.
And the third one that I want to say is what I can't believe is the fucking Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan thing. I can't believe that happened.
Yeah.
It is batshit insane.
Period in our history.
And it was figure skating.
Yeah.
It was figure skating.
Which makes it so much more perfect.
Like, you can't come up with a better character than Tonya Harding, the figure skating world champion, trailer trash.
Yeah, trailer trash.
You can't come up with a better. And the ice season, princess, Nancy Kerrigan.
Yeah.
Why?
You can't.
Sorry.
They have to do it. Because, like, it's not. You can't do American Crime Story because, like, nobody died. But they need to give it the People versus OJ treatment.
I would
they
watch
need
the hell out
to.
Of it.
You need American Crime... What is it called?
American Crime Story. The People versus Tonya Harding.
We need something.
Yeah.
We need to switch... Because you could do American Crime Story and then not do The People versus. You could just do American Crime Story, Tonya
fucking Harding.
And get, like, fucking Sarah Paulson to play her. Have her beef up.
Honestly, that would be perfect.
I would live, die, and come back to life.
Yeah.
For that.
You got to get involved in that show somehow.
She had her
like weird dumb boyfriend.
Jeff Galooly.
Yeah.
Who was one of the guys who beat her up?
Jeff Galooly was one of the people that hired the two goons.
The two
fucking true idiots to try to kill or beat up Nancy.
Oh, hurt her? Okay, I'll do it now. No, not now.
What are you doing? Like, so, and in honest to God, broad daylight. Like, truly, like, and then
what
honestly,
are you doing?
The circus. And, like, just, I can't believe. Oh, man, that. And also, like, the amount of shit that she got for, like, literally, like, who knows if it was, like, a little put on or not. I don't know.
Nancy Kerrigan?
But I believe that Nancy Kerrigan, like, is a little bit of a piece of work, too. Because she was, like, truly, she's the face of white privilege.
But Tanya's also white. What's your
point? No. But Tanya never had any privilege in her goddamn life.
Oh, sure.
That's the thing is, like, when you watch the documentary, you're, like, you're almost, like,
rooting for
Tanya. You're almost,
like,
with Tanya. You're like, yeah, this bitch had to go. She was rich. She had the endorsements. She had to go. Whoa. She had to get clubbed.
That's beautiful.
We had to clear the way for Tanya.
No one's fully good. No one's fully evil. I love that.
Shades of gray.
It's like Game of Thrones, bitch.
It's the rule number 78 of culture. There is a shade of gray.
That's the rule.
Listen, I can't believe those three stories of the 90s truly could only have happened in the 90s. But then again, here we have Trump running for goddamn president. So maybe it all gets more. But you know what? Also, as we learned today, the title of this episode, Life is a Farce.
Life is a Farce. A theme that we've touched on multiple times.
Yes. We've come to a segment in our show. This is a favorite segment.
Yes.
This is called I Don't Think So, Honey. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to pick something in culture that you are feeling some kind of way about. And you got to rail against it and say, I don't think so, honey.
As many times as possible.
It doesn't have to necessarily make sense. It has to.
Do we
to
all
say,
do one or do I just do
we
one?
We all do one.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You have to say, I don't think so, honey, and you got to be passionate.
Okay. So I have one.
You're going to go first because I have one too. You go first though. I actually came prepared this week.
I came prepared this week too.
I came semi-prepared.
Okay, same. I knew so my subject matter.
Give me your phone so I can do the clock. All right, so this is Bone Yang, I Don't Think So Honey, and go.
I Don't Think So Honey, Chinese consulate and the Chinese consulate website, honey. I Don't Think So Honey, the website for not being very clear with the guidelines on how what paperwork I should bring. Ooh. What should be notarized. Ooh. What IDs I should bring. What inviter identification I should bring. It is not clear whatsoever, and I am not going to wait in line for hours and hours at the consulate, which is only open 5 days a week, weekdays from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Ooh. Horrible hours. Why can't you accommodate those of us who work from nine to five? I Don't Think So Honey. Ooh. For those stupid hours. I Don't Think So Honey. I'm not going to wait in line for that much time and then have me turned away from the window because I don't have the appropriate paperwork filled out or the right amount of copies or what have you. I Don't Think So Honey. This is a farce. I want to get into my country that my parents grew up in, that my grandparents live in, that all my extended family is from. I have a connection to this country and I understand that things are sensitive right now with tourism coming to China, but I Don't Think So Honey. This should be an easier process. You should trust me implicitly when I try to go back to China to get a visa. I Don't Think So Honey. That is 1 minute.
That is 1 minute. That's Bone Yang's I Don't Think So Honey. Ooh. And boy, it was more words per minute than you've ever had.
I got very, you know what? I get very flustered. I get a little marble mouthed. You know, it's hard for me.
I think you did a great job.
Thank you, Nicole. But wow, I think
now it's going to be easier at the consulate. I think they heard that and they're gonna clear the way.
Consulates are part of culture and we need to hold them accountable as cultural institutions.
Consulate culture.
Consulate
culture.
Whereas
that's what we're living in.
Yes.
Okay, I have one and it's not going to be as incisive as yours was. Okay. It's gonna be more passionate.
Great, here we go. I love passion and incisiveness, but sometimes we can only do one.
Here we go.
1 minute starts now.
I Don't Think So Honey, that one blonde pundit that I see on all the shows, and you know who you are. I'm not even kidding about this anymore. I saw you after the debate. I saw you after the Republican National Convention. It's you, and I don't know her name, but I know her face. And she is the one, and in her eyes, whenever she talks to somebody who is of a different race than her, you can see fear in her eyes. And I call her out because I look at her, and she was actually trying to tell a black gentleman on CNN the other day that Obama has done less for the black community than Donald Trump will. And it was crazy. And I was like, you are the kind of person who, if you were walking on the street and you saw a black person coming your way, you would pull your bag tighter to you. Shame on you. You have deer in the headlight eyes. You have blonde hair. I've seen you before. I'll finish you. And I'm done with you. And I'll find your name. I'll say it next episode. That's 1 minute.
That's 1 minute.
I don't know her name.
Okay. Is it Dana Bash? She's on CNN.
You look it up while I do mine.
Dana Bash.
She's not particularly conservative, but I don't know who
you're
talking about.
It's not like Mika Fox or
is it Mika Brzezinski?
It is not Mika Brzezinski. I know her.
Dana Bash.
It is not Dana Bash. No, but isn't it crazy? All these women look the same.
I mean, especially on Fox, but okay.
It's crazy. It's stupid.
We'll get to the bottom of this. Okay, but Nicole, are you ready for your 1 minute?
I'm ready.
I Don't Think So, Honey. All right, and here we go.
Okay, War Dogs? I Don't Think So, Honey.
Woo!
I Don't Think So, Honey. Have I seen it? No. Am I going to see it? I Don't Think So, Honey. War Dogs looks like exactly like Wolf of Wall Street, which I hated, but minus the attractive main character.
Yes.
It's just two ugly guys, and now instead of a story about how one person fucked over a first world country, now it's about how two guys fuck over a third world country. I Don't Think So, Honey.
No.
Wolf of Wall Street was the movie version of a story that a drunk, coked out coworker you barely know tells you at a party that will not end. I Don't Think So, Honey. Those actors are not real actors. That screenplay's not a real screenplay. I Don't Think So, Honey.
Wow.
It's being marketed to 14-year-old boys who are now, it's propaganda.
All it is
propaganda for 14-year-old boys to suddenly love war. It's exactly what Jarhead was. It's exactly what Apocalypse Now was back in the day. I Don't Think So, Honey. I'm not going to support this regime of terror, especially when you could go see fucking War Dogs, or not War Dogs, when you could see Bad Moms, which is great.
Yes. Yeah. That's 1 minute. Wow.
All right. Ended up who is in War Dogs? Is that Adam Devine?
No.
Who is in War Dogs?
Fucking the guy who's, he was in Wolf of Wall Street.
Fucking Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill.
Ew.
No. Get him out.
Yeah, he's in it. And it might be Adam. It's not Adam Devine, but I think it's a guy who looks like him.
Sure.
Well, it's an average white guy playing an average white guy character based on a true story about how they killed a lot of brown people.
Miles Teller.
Miles Teller. Honestly, I don't think so, honey. Miles Teller. No, I don't think so.
Our producer Joe is agreeing.
Do you
with
say
his
I
body.
Don't think so, honey?
Yeah, Joe hates Miles Teller.
I can't stand Miles Teller.
What else has he done?
I'll tell you what he's done. An obnoxious interview in Esquire.
Oh, he's the guy.
He's the guy. And also, I met the fiance of the woman that wrote that article. It was so random. He actually is Henry's friend.
Oh.
And I was out for drinks with Henry and his friends. And this guy goes, yeah, I'm getting married. And I was like, oh, what does your wife do? And he said, she's a writer for Esquire. You might have read that article about Miles Teller. She wrote it. I'm like, that was amazing. And started a real conversation about what a fucking douche stick he is.
I love it. I love that he's out of the closet with his douchiness.
Oh, yeah. And he's also like, it also truly, I don't need any more Leonardo DiCaprios.
No.
I don't need him. Like, I don't need him. Give me more Zoe Saldana's.
Give me more Zoe Saldana's. Yeah. Give me more Halle Berry's.
Rule number 106 of culture. I don't need no more Leonardo DiCaprio's. Give me more Zoe Saldana's.
The best rule.
You know, I just want to say one thing before we close. For those of you that are friends with me on Facebook, which you all probably are. I
love doing my own podcast where I'm like addressing a broader audience.
Yeah,
but I know who
you are. Yeah. And if you haven't friended me yet, friend me. I usually will see if we have over 10 mutual friends and then we'll all accept it.
There you go.
Open myself up to a lot of people that way. I just want to say I posted the trailer of a movie called Kidnap that's coming out with Halle Berry. And this is the trailer of the century.
I think, Nicole, you might know this. Is there an award for best trailer?
I think there is. I don't know what it's called, but I think there is. And that trailer should win it.
Should win
for
every award.
Time she says, oh, God. Oh, God.
Every time she just talks. The whole movie is her talking to herself.
The whole movie is, oh, no. Where's my phone? Oh, God. My son. My kid. You listen to me. I will never stop to get my kid.
Does she have a contract? Is there something in her rider that says that she must say, you listen to me?
Yes, absolutely.
You listen to me.
Ooh, I mean, listen.
You listen to me would be a great title for a podcast.
You listen to me.
You listen to me. That should have been what this
she, oh, she. I think she even says, let me tell you something.
Let me tell you something.
And the best line that ends that whole trailer, you took the wrong kid. Blackout.
Which somebody also, Andrew Farmer posted on the status. Honestly, this is so real. They were like, also glad the person that stole the kid is in a very easy to see turquoise
getaway
station wagon. Like, it's the easiest color to see in the world. Like, so, it's so funny.
I love it. I love these Taken movies. It's basically Taken.
Obsessed.
It's Red Eye meets Obsessed meets
Flight
Taken,
Plan
meets Flight Plan meets Speed meets...
I love it. I live for these
All
fucking movies.
It.
We need more of them. I don't feel like there's enough. Honestly.
We need one character, Halle Berry, Chase, Thrill.
Yes.
I hope they're calling it a thriller because I'm thrilled.
I'm thrilled, baby.
I'm thrilled.
Well, listen, maybe we'll all go see it.
I will do that. After we're done recording, let's pick a day. I'll go see it.
The last movie Nicole and I saw together was The Artist. And thank you so much, Nicole, for coming.
Nicole.
We love Nicole. Where can we find you on social media?
You can find
media?
me, very confusing. There's a 14-year-old girl in Australia who snatched up some of the...
Fuck her.
Yeah,
fuck
so
her.
On Twitter, it's at Nicole Conlon. On Instagram and Snapchat, it's at the Nicole Conlon.
The.
You can look up Stevedore Comedy and see
fantastic
some sketches.
Yes.
I think that's about it.
Great. Nicole, we love you so
we
much.
Love it.
Thank
love
you for being
we
in the
love
show.
It. We love it. Las Culturistas Podcast. Thank you, Forever Dog. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I'm
Matt Rogers. That's Bo Nyang. Bye.
Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit foreverdogproductions.com.